Blog Talk Radio.
Constituent Advocacy Campaigns Voter Education Series. Tonight we are returning for our third broadcast, and we want to share with you very important information relative to constituents of Tennessee Senate District 19. Over the last two decades, Nashville, Tennessee has experienced rapid changes. Given the fact that the city comprises the 19th Senatorial District, Tennessee, constituents are directly affected, either positively or negatively, by this social change and challenges that come with it, by government policies, and even the frustration that many have, both new and old residents. Tonight, the part three of our four-part voter education series focuses on current status of Tennessee Senate District 19, issues of importance. And what we want to do is to, again, enlighten individuals. Now, let me just say with full disclosure that tonight I am not announcing that I'm running for the Tennessee Senate District 19 race. However, I do intend to share with you as an advocate for constituents very important information that we should consider as we prepare for the upcoming election in November of 2018. I do believe as a resident and a constituent for the last 30 years, it's important to have that. Now, having said that, I am not ruling out the possibility. But today, again, we are speaking as one of your neighbors, as a constituent in Senate District 19. Okay, so if you've perhaps watched this broadcast or the live stream on Facebook, you know that we have already shared two parts to the four-part series. First, we dealt with the issue on December 1st of knowing who your senator is and what's expected of them. And we identified the boundaries for Tennessee Senate District 19. So if you're not familiar with if you're in the district or not, or rather not your address, your block, or your zip code, or your voting precinct falls within it, you can actually learn that information. And I'm going to talk to you in just a second how to use our website as a tool, an instrument to help you get that clarity. Then in part two, we talked about the budget, the Tennessee budgetary process, and how funding could flow down to constituents. There again, you'll find that information. And tonight again, part three focuses on current issues in Tennessee Senate District 19. These issues that are of importance. So let me briefly guide you, and you can follow me if you don't mind, to our webpage at www.constituentadvocacy.com. That's www.constituentadvocacy.com. When you get there, you can I would like to take your time and view all the information at your leisure. But specifically tonight, you can actually follow us, and you go scroll down to the bottom of the page where it says Organizer's Message, and right beneath that, you'll see where you can like us on Facebook. Join a group, and you can stay in the loop on all important information from this point forward, as well as you can watch the previously recorded podcast presentation. And there you can see all of the information that we've shared previously. In addition to that, tonight you can open that up. Let's do that now. We'll click on the tab. And when we open that up, what you'll find is in addition to the video or the pre-recorded video presentation, there is a document there next to it, a PDF document that will allow you to open it up and follow me through this presentation that we're going to do tonight, as well as see the other presentations that have been presented. Okay? So that's how we use the website. Again, that's www.constituentadvocacy.com. CONSTITUETADVACY.com. All right. I think we have a pretty good understanding there. And those of you on Facebook, thank you for joining us. And I want to invite you to call in tonight and share with us in our dialogue at this number. I'm going to give my number as well, but I want you to be able to call in tonight live in this broadcast. We'll be about an hour here. 657-383-0944 is the number you can call. Again, that's 657-383-0944. Be happy to entertain your questions and or your comments as we go through this presentation. Okay, I think we got a pretty good sense of that. Now, as we did previously, I'll go through a couple of the slides, then I'll stop to check and see if anyone has checked in with us in terms of calling in. Don't hesitate to give us a call. No question is off limits. We do just ask you to keep it relevant to our conversation. And tonight we're talking about the current status of Tennessee Senate District 19, the issues that are of importance. I don't mind briefly kind of reviewing the first two sections, but we do want to focus most of our time here tonight on topic three. And keep in mind that you can always go to the webpage, www.constituentadvocacy.com, and you can get a review of all of the information and the full thing. And, of course, you can always look at this live stream, pre-recorded live stream video. All right. Having said that, I think we are good to begin now. And my name is Reuben Dockery, and I am the organizer of the Constituent Advocacy Campaign, as well as the Voter Education Series Facilitator. All right. I think we covered all the bases now. So let's begin with our presentation. Again, this is the Tennessee Senate District 19 Constituent Advocacy Campaigns Voter Education Series, Part 3, Current Status of Tennessee Senate District 19, Issues of Importance. We're going to look first at the objectives, the things that we want to make sure you walk away with tonight from this presentation. We have three objectives. Upon the completion of this section, observers will hear an overview of the current status of socioeconomic conditions prevalent in Tennessee Senate District 19. Learn about the allocation of and missed opportunities for use of state budget funding since the 2014 Tennessee Senate District 19 election. And then lastly, be presented with a proactive agenda to strengthen the economic, social, health, and educational well-being of all constituents of Tennessee Senate District 19. All right? So those are our objectives. Now, let's go and give you that historical overview of the Senate District. We kind of addressed this a little bit in part one, but this is a more detailed synopsis of what the history of Senate District 19 is. And what I find is that many people are not really aware of how it came to be and why it exists and really the importance of it. And that factors in, we're going to learn tonight, how that factors in to voter apathy and the lack of interest in the electoral process altogether. All right. In 1969, when Tennessee Senatorial District 19 was carved out of the city of Nashville, it had an approximately 90% plus African-American population. And at that time, the late Senator Avon Williams, Jr., was elected the first senator to represent the district, 1969. After the formation of the Metropolitan Nashville-Davidson County government in 1965, the population distribution was significantly changed, largely because now Nashville became a part or annexed with several other counties and cities. In 1992, the now incumbent Senator Thelma Hopper was first elected as as senator after Avon Williams, and she was the second, and has served for the past 25 years now. During her tenure, the demographic and economic conditions of Senate District 19 has and continues to change drastically. Today, the African-American community demographically represents only approximately 53.3% of the Senate District and 26% of Metropolitan Nashville-Davidson County. Now, new business trends and local government policies have fostered this process of gentrification with a concentration in voting precincts, you'll find, with a traditionally high African-American population. Additionally, predominantly African-American populated public schools have high failure rates, and there are pockets of unemployment and poverty concentrated in predominantly African-American voting precincts. Now, why do I focus on precincts? Because it is on the precinct level that is determined where you're eligible to go cast a vote to represent your interests. But when you understand that while some people are doing well in Nashville and others are not doing so well, and we begin to have a panoramic view of just where the problems are, we can't understand how it hits us and why it's important for us to be aware and to be actively involved. Over the last 10 years, new residents have been attracted to the Nashville area, and they have become, by default, the object of frustration for negative residents who feel squeezed out by large-scale economic developments, seemingly catering to the wealthiest residents. Those tend to be new and some that have been around a while. There's this frustration and anxiety. We're going to look into it. We're going to dig into it tonight, okay, and try to understand the real root cause of some of the indicators we see with high crime rates, we see with disparities and symptoms of emotional breakdown and things of that nature. All right? So now I want to look at the fact that it is voter apathy that is prevalent. And I'm going to demonstrate to you what that looks like and how that functions, okay? So we're looking at constituent frustration that is expressed via low voter turnout. When we look at, and we're going to understand why there's such low voter turnout, particularly so in those precincts, those voting precincts that I just made reference to, which are predominantly African American. So we're looking at Tennessee Senate District 19 and its turnout. In the years from 2006 to 14, so that's three voting cycles that we're looking at. In 2006, 31,207 voters participated altogether, whether they were Democrats, Republicans, Independents, or whatever they may politically have identified themselves as. The now incumbent Thelma Harper was unchallenged in that particular election. But only 29% of 109,000 voters that could have voted took the time to do so. In 2010, 24,575, 23% of the 109 voters cared to participate. At that time, there was one challenger to the incumbent Senator Harper. However, in 2014, 30,873 voters voted for somebody that was a Republican, a Democrat, Independent, and a write-in candidate, right? There were three challengers to the incumbent, and she remained there with 28% of the population voting out of 109,000. When you average all three of these voting cycles out, what you'll find is the fact that about 28% of the regular voting population cares enough to even be involved. Now, there are a number of variables there, and we're going to kind of talk about some of them as we continue to go through this presentation tonight. But one of the main things is there is significant apathy and then unawareness that factors into the low voter turnout. Now, some people focus their attention on national elections and sometimes on local elections in the city, but you have a state race as well for your senator as well as your representative, and those people are supposed to represent you. All right, and we're going to talk about some of the issues, and then we're going to offer you how the constituent advocacy campaign will approach providing some sort of action steps toward that, okay? So having said that, let's look a little bit closer at the budget. Not necessarily money that we want to spend, but money that has already been allocated, voted on, and spent. And we're really looking at missed opportunities in Senate District 19. So we're focusing our time frame from 2013 through 2017. Okay, we're really not looking at 2018 right now, but we're looking at monies that's already been allocated and spent according to the state budget. All right. So and we're looking at the allocation in the area of K through 12 education. We're looking at health as it relates to mental health and overall wellness, law and safety, economic and community development. I hear too often, even when I was a political candidate, people say we need money for programs to help our children for after-school deals. And sometimes they think it should come from the federal government. But there are resources that can possibly be used for that. I hear people talk about we got young people walking around on edge with mental health issues that are not properly addressed or identified. Here people are always talking about the crime rate. Just this year in Nashville, over 100 homicides, most of them involving African-American males under the age of 30. Okay? These are serious crimes. I hear people talk about all the time, we need jobs and we really want to be able to start our own business. We need entrepreneurial economic opportunities. Well, guess what? There are departments on the state level. And would you believe that monies have been spent? Here it is. In K through 12 education, $809,786,900. The missed opportunity was to focus at least $24,538,900 997, train attention in those four areas to Senate District 19. I talked to you about how you can, some things you can do to have make sure your senator is involved on the budget allocation level. And I'm going to talk about holding them accountable next time. But today what I'm saying to you is there's a missed opportunity because there are 33 senatorial districts, as we previously explained. And if you broke it down that way, that would be the breakdown. Then 21 council districts could have benefited from $1,168,524. We often complain about particularly African-American males in public schools, and you have a high suspension rate. You have a high dropout rate, right? And all these things are concerning, naturally, and they should be. I don't think it's just African-Americans that are concerned, but whites and Hispanics and others that make up our Senate district are concerned. But people often don't know where to look. Remember we talked about the apathy and the unawareness? Because people are generally unaware of these things, and that's not to insult anyone's intelligence, but it's to just state a fact. In the area of health, from the health department, $51 million, $144,100 allocated over the last 4 years. Missed opportunity in District 19, $1,549,821. On the council level, okay, $73,821. Now, am I suggesting that you could just go and get that and give it to them? No, what I'm saying is that these were allocated. And if the people on the council level and in Senate District 19 are not aware that they exist and how to go about holding people accountable for them, either in the public school, in the health department, and I talked to you last time about opportunities or prospects for individuals within those council district voting precincts accessing those funds and having some control over their use, okay? Missed opportunity. Law and safety. $172,920,600. Missed opportunity, District 19, $52,400,180. On the council level, $2,495,247. That you, if you knew about it and you could have been in communication and involved in the process, you possibly could have had a better benefit or held people accountable for it. Okay? Then lastly, economic and community development, very critical piece. Sometimes people think it's all about just looking for and getting a job, but there are people with skill sets who would love to put that to work in their own business venture if there was support for it. Okay? $596,772,800 over the last 4 years. Missed opportunity on the Senate District 19 level. $18,084,024. Okay? On the council level, $861,144. Could have been. You could have had a little bit more, better access to. How many guys that are committing crime, engaged in activities in their mind based on survival and displaying issues of mental health issues, could have had a better start and perhaps a more improved life, quality of life, had they had access to training and support in economic and community development within their voting precinct, within their neighborhood, on their blocks? You understand what I'm saying? There's a correlation to crime, incarceration, and failure in public education. Cannot be overstated. All right. Now, a total over the last 4 years of $1,630,624,000 $400 allocated, spent, went somewhere. But you ain't seen. It doesn't seem like you've seen it. It hadn't benefited you. I mean, you're still in the same condition year after year. We're talking about now 12 years, over a 12-year period. Okay? Missed opportunity, grand total on the council district level, $96,573,022. That's on the Senate district level, I'm sorry. On the council level itself, $4,598,716. What am I saying? I'm saying that your senator has the duty and responsibility to make you aware of the allocation of these funds and do everything they can to make sure you have the maximum benefit. It's like a tree falling in the forest. There's no one to witness it. Does it really matter? We know it matters because we see the apathy and we see the fruit of that apathy and that unawareness on part of constituents, voters. That is your power. That's your say. All right? Let me go and see if we have anyone in queue, and we don't right now. But, again, I'll reiterate that you can go to www.constituentadvocacy.com, and you can find this information. And the other information, there is also a platform there for the Constituent Advocacy Campaign. And you can join us. In fact, let's just, for a second, let's go there. Let's go to the page there. You can join the campaign itself. We would love to have you. As you notice, when you get to the web page, you, under More, click over the word that says More, and then it allows you to click on there and join the campaign. Okay? Subscribe to our page. Communicate with me. My number is 615-498-4669. Again, that's 615-498-4669. When you subscribe to the page, we'll have your email and contact information, and I'll be happy to provide you all of the information that we're sharing with you tonight and dialogue with you and communicate with you. Okay? All righty. All right. Now, so let's move forward with the presentation. And now we're going to talk about a little bit more in detail in each of those areas that I talked about missed opportunities. I'm going to describe the nature of the missed opportunities. And you know that for Tennessee Senate District 19, prospectively, $24,538,997 could have come to the Senate District over the last 4 years. It was allocated out there somewhere. Somebody got it. But many people struggling in voting precincts didn't see it, didn't see the benefit of it. And we talked about $1,168,524 in K through 12 education alone, all right, on the council level. In Tennessee Senate District 19, more than half of the schools of the Department of Education's priority list are attended by residents of Senate District 19 voting precincts. In other words, they make up the district. Despite the presence of federal, and specifically I'm talking about race-to-top funds that came from the federal government to the state of Tennessee, and yes, they're supposed to be used for the entire state, but I showed you how there's a certain amount of money that reasonably could have been targeted if the constituents knew how to help hold the people that are administrating the funds accountable, okay? And we're talking about specifically in Davidson County public school system who got the money from Race to Top that was shared from the state. And other funding programs, many students who live in specific, in the District 19 voting precincts, continue now to struggle academically. Don't take my word. Just go look at the State Department of Education's website, look at their accountability for the last 12 years. And what you'll find is what I discovered, and that is that particularly African Americans make up the population that struggles the most academically in reading and in math. Doesn't sound good, does it? Yes, they're Caucasian or white children who struggle as well, Hispanic. But the larger number, you'll find, the data suggests, are African-American who live in those voting precincts, and they attend those schools that are on the priority list. Now, who am I blaming? What right now I'm saying, we need change in Senate leadership such that a focus of your Senate representation will be on turning this around. Together, we can come up with a solution, but we need leadership. All right. The Nashville Area Chamber of Commerce have consistently identified in their annual report of the school system the need for parent involvement and the focus on it as the most important factor in lowering the achievement gap, particularly in those voting precincts, and preparing young people to be able to take the jobs that are anticipated to come to the state of Tennessee. Okay? Making sure that academically they're adept and they're prepared to compete for them. All right? Particularly when we talk about Senate District 19 voting precinct. Why do you keep talking about voting precincts, Doctor? Because that's the lowest level of consideration for funding and representation in the state government. Okay. Now, what you gonna do about it, Doc? What you propose to do about it? the constituent advocacy campaign's position in terms of proposed action is thus: the focus of the campaign is to craft public policy that empower parent constituents of Senate District 19 by establishing one. A 21st Century Community Learning Center. And there is a specified grant process on the state level and under the Department of Education auspices for that. Family-centered educational support system. Yet again, Department of Education have on their website information relative to that. And then, this may not exist on there, but there's an opportunity through communication with the leadership to create the stream of it. And that's funding streams for academic enrichment all the way down to the precinct where our babies are. Okay? That's it. Now, let me talk about the problem with health and mental health and wellness and so forth and so on. Recapping, Senate District 19 could have, with the right focus and with the constituents being empowered with knowledge and information, to hold folk accountable, they could have benefited more from $1,549,821. And on the council level, specifically, $73,801 could have come and been a benefit. Okay? Now, according to the Tennessee Institute of Public Health, there are four key issues that affect the overall health of Tennesseans, including those that are part of constituents or are constituents, rather, of Senate District 19. Now, those determinants are health care at 10%. We definitely need to focus on our health care system because there are individuals who desperately need it, elderly as well as young people and those that are struggling. Health behaviors at 40%. That's a major determinant. Okay? Health behaviors. There's a need for focused education and support to encourage people to improve their diet, sleep patterns, and overall behaviors that affect you physically and mentally. Okay? Socioeconomic factors. Quality of education has a lot to do with your quality of life, and it has a lot to do with your outlook on life and self-confidence and things of that nature and your emotional well-being. 40%. 40% is what they said is a major determining factor. Then lastly, the physical environment that you live in at 10%. And anybody that know where there are pockets of poverty, unemployment and high unemployment and poverty – that there are significant indicators of physical environmental factors that factor into all the overall scheme. The latter are manifested in Senate District 19, unfortunately, in the forms of alcohol and drugs, which we see too often, and abuse of those things, street and domestic violence, as I made reference to earlier, in terms of the crime rate. HIV is a major consideration. And there are efforts to deal with this. I'm not suggesting there aren't. Do we need improvement? Absolutely. And sexually transmitted disease, okay, particularly in certain voting precincts, health diseases of other causes, such as hypertension, just to name a few of them. So what does the Constituent Advocacy Campaign propose as an action? Constituents need Senate leadership that will ensure adequate education and treatment for all residents, and not just a select few who know how to access it. Accordingly, this campaign advocates for the following: broader access to community health education and resources related, mental health resources and focused mental health treatment. Okay? I believe that that would make a significant difference. All right. Let me go to the next one and deal with law and public safety, and then we'll check in to see if there's anyone who wants to conversate with us. The number is 657-383-0944. If you're tuning in from Facebook, we'll be happy to entertain your question, your comment. Please don't hesitate to give us a holler here. And, again, we'll be more than happy to entertain you. I'm just looking here to see if we have anyone. And after this next slide, I'll go back and stop to see if there's someone who wants to share with us, have any ideas or questions that you want to bring to bear. And we'll be happy to entertain those. All righty. So under law and safety, we discovered that specifically over the last 4 years, 2013 to 2017, Senate District 19 could have benefited directly from a total of $52,400,180 at the Senate district level, specifically on the council level, respectively, $2,495,247. Now, let's get into it. Over the last two decades, constituents of Senate District 19 have been plagued with a particular set of socioeconomic challenges. The recipe for long-term stagnation for many people, residents, constituents, has been comprised of broken families, dire poverty, academic underachievement that's persistent, poor physical and social-emotional health. When you put all that together, it's like a cocktail that'll knock you out. All of the previously mentioned issues combined constitute what I believe is the cause of the unsafety in our neighborhood. In fact, you've heard me say it before in other settings. We've run the neighbor out of the hood. So all we got now is a hood. Okay? But it is focused leadership that helps us to restore neighborhoods and build healthy, viable communities for everybody. All right? What are you going to do, Doctor? How are you going to do that? What do you propose? The Constituent Advocacy Campaign suggests we need Senate District 19 leadership that will utilize their role and influence in the state legislature in a manner that guarantee constituents gain the maximum benefit. I want to emphasize that the maximum benefit of resources. What resources? Resources such as federal community policing funding that will help our local police, who many people feel like are targeting, particularly African-American male, but it will assist them in understanding the subcultural nuances as well as ethnic traits that are often perceived as being criminal or leading to crime, which leads to the alleged profiling. But there are funds on the federal level, and I've been told that some of them are limited, but we know that they come here. You, when you go and look at them, by law they have to disclose it and indicate them. The question is where they're going, how they're being used. But if you don't know they exist, you don't know to hold the right people accountable for. Okay? Then state monies, such as we talked about this previously, the family and juvenile court grants that are available. You need to know they exist. Work to position yourself, to qualify for them and compete for them. If you don't ask for them or you don't apply for them, guess what? They're not going to just pop out the sky, friend. All right? Then lastly, if there are none available, working through your senator, we can create other available resources or opportunities to build and sustain safe neighborhoods and make them viable for everybody. With gentrification, as I mentioned earlier, some leave one area and go to another one and populate it. You still haven't solved the problem. You're just moving around. All right. Let me go now, as promised, and see if there's someone that want to join us. Again, the number 657. We're going to walk through the presentation, and when we end, you can always go to the website, www.constituentadvocacy.com, and look at the previous recorded podcast presentation. All right, and you can see this full presentation via a video, as well as you can read the PDF document, the slides for it. Okay, but you can call me live tonight before we end here at 657-383-0944. I'd love to entertain your call, your question, your comments. Okay? I would say I could be wrong, but the facts are indisputable. I mean, you know, and really what we need, friends, neighbors, is we need to be more aware, collectively speaking. I'm not saying that nobody is aware of this and that I'm the only one that's aware. However, when we look at the apathy and the unawareness that persist in major voting precincts, we understand why people don't come out to vote, why they don't care, why they feel like somebody is taking advantage of them and there's nothing you can do about it. That's the biggest fallacy. There is something you can do about it. And what young guys are doing on the streets is they're making the position. They're taking the position. Either it's going to be the ballot or it's going to be the bullet. The evidence of that in Nashville is over 100 homicides involving African-American males largely. Just imagine if they had voted and advanced their interests that led to their early demise. I mean, all right. Let me, it looks like we got a number here, 314-381-4944. Welcome to Constituent Advocacy voter education series. How you doing, sir?
What's your pretty good. I'm doing fine. What's your position on school choice?
On school choice? So
yes, where a parent can put their child where they want. Yes, where a parent can put their child where they feel is best for them in the environment, and a voucher follows them.
Right. It is a parent.
And I got one other question.
Okay, it is a parent's right and their responsibility to see to their child's growth and development. Education is a major aspect of that. And because it is their right, it is their choice. Now, the question is, does the government that we pay taxes to and that we're governed under provide options and opportunities? What we know is they do. Right now, the state of Tennessee has legislation for charter school. They don't have vouchers right now. Many have pushed for it. And I know that people are trying to protect the traditional public school system. It is not about attacking the teacher as it is about making sure that the dollars allocated for the education of our children as a parent are best used for. So that's really where the focus is. If the metro public schools can do better, and I believe it's the balkanization of education that really impedes the learning process for many students that have other variables, challenges, and things.
You're going around the question I asked. Ask the question again.
What's
your position on school choice where parents can take their child and put them in the educational environment that they feel is best for their child?
That's what I said. I believe
what money
right
would be allocated to them.
Like,
yeah,
that's
and it does
right.
not have to be charter school.
I agree. That's their right,
yeah.
And they should have the opportunity to exercise that right. That's my position.
All right, and another point, on some of these programs, and you know, the federal government and some successful school districts, federal government spends very little money in those districts, and also the states. Most of those districts are funded by the local community themselves. But
okay.
What do you think about this insurance that we call it affordable health? Don't you think that that should be left up to the states to handle those rather than the federal government? And this mandate that's requiring people to get involved in something that they otherwise would not want to get involved with, that is wrong, and I see where the mandate is going to be left out of this tax bill.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's what I read. You're absolutely right. Now, so, you know, people get into political arguments about it based on partisan positions. But when you read for yourself and you understand the impact, it is true that the state knows best its residents. And that's what we talked about in part one. When it comes time to determine mm-hmm. what the priorities for funding are on the state government level, your representative, your senator, ought to be actively engaged in talking with constituents and those that are in those departments to make sure that they can best use the money. When the federal government comes in, it's about what's good for everybody as a whole, and you lose the interest of individuals on the state level, particularly I'm talking about on your precinct level. That's what has happened.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and here's another point. Right now, you have insurance company lobbyists at Capitol Hill that's
yes,
spending
sir.
Money on your congresspeople. But
right.
if you put that program back and let the states handle it, then you
right.
can have organizations and associations that can create insurance pool where they get the best insurance rates and offer it to their groups. Now those lobbyists has to come to the states and deal with each one of those associations and organizations and spend the money with them. That's
correct.
Spreading the money around more so than what it is now. And one other final thing. You know, you talk
okay.
about police brutality and so forth. Municipalities, especially the municipality that's majority black, they already
okay.
have the power to stop police brutality. Police are
okay.
nothing more than employees, and the
Absolutely.
People are the employers. And if they form police commissions and write policy
yes,
on the behavior
yes,
of police officers and say, you're not going to do this, you're not going to engage in high-speed chase, you're not going to, if you enter into a position like Tamir Rice there in Cleveland, you feel you fear for your life, you need to retreat
Correct.
And call for backup rather than killing
Correct.
Somebody. And if they don't do that, you get rid of them.
I think your point is well taken. In fact, when I ran here in Davidson County for a county seat, council seat in my district, and I had a series of barbershop conversations with young guys straight from the poverty-stricken, challenged neighborhood. And they came in, they filled up the place, and one young man was very pointed about what you're saying. He said, what the blank blank you going to do about the what you're talking about? And I said, you're absolutely right. Any police officer or public official, period, the 1965 color law clause makes it illegal for anyone to use the authority of government to use and abuse any resident or citizen, and they need to go, period. But if you're elected official,
absolutely.
If your elected officials are not doing their job, then guess what? They get away with it. That's the problem. That's
and I'll tell you something else.
Between the resident, the constituent, and the voting precincts in their neighborhood, and those people that are paid to represent your best interests. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And you know, I'm going to tell you something else. A police, any public service agency, whether it's the police department, fire department, mm-hmm. school district, city hall, or public works, their mm-hmm. employees should reflect the population that you are serving.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
People that's working in those agencies should not be coming from miles around to work on those jobs. You should take the hiring out of the hand of the chief and have a central
wow.
depository for applications. When they want to hire somebody, they call down for the next application. It does away with that nepotism right there.
Agreed. Caller, do you know that right now people are getting themselves together, ready to campaign for the primary on both parties, most likely, in 2018? But how many of you think going to have that conversation with the constituents about holding them accountable?
They're not.
Making sure that what you're talking about happens. So it's a joke. It's a game, right? And that explains why we have such voter apathy and low turnout, because people, for whatever reason, are not aware that your vote is the power to control and to hold these folks who are supposed to represent your interests accountable. But if you're not organized on the voter precinct level, you'll never get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Look at the people in Alabama.
Yeah,
now, I can
absolutely.
Appreciate blacks coming out.
Me
and
too.
Voting
me
for
too.
Doug Jones because
too.
Of what he done in 2002.
I
he prosecuted
too.
The Klan.
I can too.
But here's the thing.
Who can't appreciate that?
Why didn't you demand? Why didn't you demand something from Doug Jones before you gave your vote to him?
Come on now, come on.
My brother
That's
stayed in Alabama,
about.
And he said he was at a meeting, and Black said, "All we want you to do is treat us fair." What kind of
wow.
crazy mess is that?
What I'm saying,
you should demand from them what you want.
Absolutely, absolutely. It doesn't matter if he's a Democrat or Republican, if or she, if they're not doing what you need. First of all, you need to know what you need, right? And then you need to articulate
right.
that. Then you need to enforce that via your vote and making sure you are involved in the process as things go throughout the year. One of the things we point out in part one is the fact that. There's a certain time of the year when budget conversations are held. That's the, if you ask me, that's a critical time of the year. And if your elected official is not talking to you and having focus groups and forums and what have you, at that time, you ought to be thinking about getting rid of them then. So they wait.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to go ahead and let you have your show back. And yeah,
thank
I appreciate the conversation.
I got a few more slides here to finish, but feel free to, you know, to listen and hold me accountable.
Thank you very much now. Bye-bye.
All right, then. Thank you, sir. So we appreciate that caller for his input and his involvement. Let's talk about economic and community development now just for a second and how it impacts residents of Senate District 19. Okay? So we discussed earlier that Senate District 19 missed an opportunity to control $84,024 on the council district level, $861,144. Well, here's the nature of the problem. Currently, Nashville-Davidson County is actively engaged, if you've been looking at all, paying attention, in planning for civic growth leading to 2025. Okay? The city's population is projected to increase from its current some 626,681 residents to well over 1 million by 2025. There's major business expansion right now, and they're expected to grow even more along with greater population growth. One of the issues is the traffic. And now, of course, the mayor is doing what she can to try to bring a transit system and things of that nature, and it's going to really require more taxation to pay for it. Somebody got to pay for it. Now, that's a whole other conversation, though. And we really can't control the senator directly on that level, how they spend the money, but they have an opportunity. That's one of the questions we posted on Facebook. There's an opportunity for you to negotiate And when money is appropriated coming from the feds and the state, for you to say, hey, we expect our constituents to benefit on this level or that level, okay? All right, the constituents of Senate District 19 need and deserve fully responsive Senate representation that will ensure their access to federal, state, and local resources that will support vibrant business development within voting precincts of the district that have long been economically deprived. My conversation with young African-American males, in particular on the street selling dope, is that if you can do that, and you have the right training and coaching, you can run your own legitimate business and contribute to the economic growth and development of your community, your neighborhood. But you don't have nobody that's supposed to be representing talking to you about that. Again, it's like that tree in the forest that fell. Didn't nobody know about it. So it really don't matter, does it? Mind over matter. When you don't mind, they don't matter. Okay. Now, what are you going to do about it? What is the constituent advocacy campaign's position? Okay. This campaign advocates for the creation of a Tennessee Senate District 19 economic empowerment zone. And it's very similar to what existed in, I think it was 1995, from the federal government. In fact, in Davidson, well, in parts of Tennessee, they identified economic empowerment zones, right, in certain regions. That same, a similar model, I believe, can be employed in Tennessee Senate District 19, and the following advocacy goals should be in place. Funding for entrepreneurial training. Okay? Focus initiative, excuse me, to decrease the district-wide unemployment rate and poverty. Better job readiness support. I'm not against people having jobs, right? But what happens is often you can get certain individuals, particularly who live in certain voting precincts, with all due respect, and put them on a job, and the difference in how long they'll stay and how well they'll do is in the mindset. And we're talking about soft skill training right now, because ethnically and subculturally there are ideas that suggest you can go into a workplace and determine when you're going to work, how much you're going to work, and that sort of thing. And you know that dog will not hunt. You got yourself a poodle trying to chase rabbit. That dog will not hunt. Okay? So we got to be focused and deliberate about this. But our leadership should be aware of this and should be involved and working with you just as much as they are when they campaign trying to get your vote. All right? I keep hearing elected officials downplay the need for entrepreneurial training. I don't understand why. That's the best way to build viable economic communities. You don't have a strong economy, you have no community. If you have a substandard education, you have an illiterate, ill-informed community. If you have a community that is riddled with disorder and there's no law, there's no order, nobody can be safe. You understand what I'm saying? All right. Okay. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about is the need for Senate District 19 unification. You heard me talk about in part one and earlier in the historical context, the fact that there are new residents here. Personally, I'm not opposed to nobody that want to live. This is America, where you want to, especially if you can afford it. But the problem is that there are policies and what have you and things of that nature. So let's talk about it just for a second. Over the last 10-plus years, the urban core of Nashville-Davidson County has been largely gentrified. You remember I told you when the district started, it was carved around Nashville, and it was about 90-plus percent African-American or black? But now the Senate district population of African Americans down to 53.3%, and in Davidson County only about between 26 and 28, based on census projection. Okay, the truth of the matter is, in East Nashville, South Nashville, West Nashville, and now North Nashville is the final frontier. And what's happening is, people that are natives to Nashville, been there all their life, been doing the same thing all their life, been struggling the same way all their life, economically and socially. Now they're being uprooted and moved out. They're angry now. And a lot of their children and grandchildren are displaying that anger via the violence and the disparity that we see particularly happening in certain voting precincts. Now that new residents are moving in, they're concerned about that because they're concerned about their safety. They're concerned about the quality of education for their children. If they're going to come here, naturally, right? That's a major concern of theirs. The migration surge poses challenge, though, for residents who have lived here in Nashville all of their lives. Where do we go? Some of the concerns that we've seen arise, particularly in the last 10 years or so, based on gentrification, are the affordable housing issue. Now, you need to be honest with people and tell them the federal definition of affordable housing, I think, is 30% of your gross annual income. If you're not, your family of four making less than $24,000, $30,000, you're pretty much on the poverty level. And you're not going to be able to afford the housing that is now booming in Nashville, Davidson County, north, east, south, and west. And only lying to you about that. Okay, so we need to be honest about that. So what we have to focus on is building your economic stability and income potential, so that you can determine what your quality of life is, okay? The second thing is increased concerns about public safety. And we see this in areas where people are buying properties, they're coming in with the expectation that it's going to be safe and we're going to be happy and everything going to be great. Well, that's not the reality, unfortunately, for many people. And then other economic pockets of economic disparity. And we showed how in certain voting precincts, there is, and even in the district as a whole, Senate District 19, there's over 7% unemployment rate. And in specific voting precincts, that is consistent. That's more than the national unemployment rate today and the unemployment rate for Davidson County as a whole. When you go down deep and you look in certain voting precincts and you ask who lived there, the truth speaks for itself. Now, so what does the constituent advocacy campaign propose you do about it? Well, here's a proposed action. Tennessee Senate District 19 needs and deserves leadership to bring a balance to both old and new residents of the Senate District. The mantra of the constituent advocacy campaign is E Pluribus Unum, understanding that from 21 council districts, okay, exists Tennessee Senate District 19. This message is consistent for residents that make up all 47 voting precincts within the district. Constituents need an advocate for the people and not just a politician looking for numbers. Different. And you got the power to change that in 2018. Hence the change 2018. All right? Now I want to offer you a preamble for Tennessee Senate District 19. Consider it, if you will. Preamble of the 19th Senatorial District of Tennessee. We the people of the 19th Senatorial District of Tennessee, in order to form a more perfect senatorial district, ensure justice, promote public harmony, provide for common protection, promote general interest, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our children, do ordain and consent to the common organization of the electorate, Tennessee Senate District 19. Please know, neighbors, that it is the electorate, the voters, that have the power, not politicians. I don't care who they are, what they look like. You got the power. And when you're organized and you're working together, guess what? You can have the maximum benefit of the government that represents you, because as in America, we have a republic form of government. That is government of, for, and by the people, not the reverse. government for itself. Okay? Now, I realize that people are different, and that's why you don't hear me advocating for any particular party. If you're a voter and you're looking at the issues on the ground, your reality, that's what you need to base your vote on. Okay? And it doesn't matter who it is. If they're not representing your interests, you got a little work to do in terms of getting rid of them, unless you're just willing to let them walk all over you. Okay? This has been part three of a four-part series. I hope that you all will join me next Friday for part four, the last part, where we will talk about how you can hold your elected official accountable. We'll lay out a process for you to do that. Okay? This has been your constituent advocacy campaign, Reuben Dockery, and the Voter Education Series facilitator. And again, join me next weekend where we will bring to you part four, how to hold your elected official accountable. And I look forward to engaging you. I want to encourage you again to go to our website at www.constituentadvocacy.com. When you get there, you will find that there are several sources of information. But most importantly, if you're watching this live Facebook stream later, it'll tell you you can go there to the website. That's www.constituentadvocacy.com. And go down to the bottom of the homepage where you see organizer's message, and you'll find a link to podcast presentations. This whole presentation is there with a video and in the form of a PDF document for you to read at your leisure. In addition to that, I'd like to encourage you to join, like us on Facebook. Just click the link and go into sign into Facebook and like our page there. Become a member there. Then I'd like for you to consider going to subscribing to our website. And it will provide us the information, and we will be able to communicate with you directly, get you all the information you need. Let's understand something. It's not about in the election cycle. It's not about running against anybody. It's about working for the people. Okay? And I want to reiterate the fact that at this point I have not announced candidacy. But what right now I want to do is to make sure that we are fully aware of what it is that's going on and how it is we can bring about the change and the difference that you need in your life. Okay? So with that, again, we thank you. And we're going to go ahead and sign off if there's no one. The number has been 657-383-0944, and we're going to end this broadcast tonight. My number to reach me is 615-498-4669. 615-498-4669. This is Reuben Dockery, the Constituent Advocacy Campaign Organizer and Voter Education Series Facilitator. Please give me a call. Subscribe with our webpage at www.constituentadvocacy.com. Constituentadvocacy.com. And subscribe to the webpage. Like us on Facebook. Communicate with us and share with us. I want to thank you again for joining me tonight, and I hope you're able to join us next weekend for our final voter education presentation and lecture, a part of this four-part series. Now, we will have subsequent other communications as we go forward, and perhaps we'll be making a determination down the road, but right now we want to inform and empower you with knowledge. Again, this is your educational series facilitator and organizer for the campaign, Reuben Dockery, and I thank you, and we look forward to communicating with you in the coming days.